Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert, Dr. Edward Overton. Dr. Overton is a professor emeritus at Louisiana State University in the Department of Environmental Sciences. Dr. Overton's research interests include understanding the fates and distributions of hydrocarbons following an oil spill, the environmental chemistry of hazardous chemicals, and the detection of environmental pollutants at the site of sample collection. Let's hear what he has to say about the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. Hi, Professor Overton. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Nice to be here.
So could you start off by giving us a rundown of something very basic that I'm sure many of us still don't understand? What is oil and how is it mined?
Well, first of all, the carbon that makes up oil started off as carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, right? And then all of the plants that grow, they get the carbon out of the atmosphere and turn it into plant material. I call that biomass. And then that biomass is all of us, the living plants, the grass, the trees, the leaves, the fish, the plankton, all of that is called biomass. And of course, we go through a life cycle. And with this plant material in the oceans, it dies, it sinks to the bottom, it gets covered up with sediment, and over millions, and I mean millions and millions of years, gets heated up and turns into the hydrocarbons that make up oil. And those hydrocarbons are less dense than water down in the ground, and they tend to rise up through the water way, way down in the ground until they hit a cap rock and can't rise any further, and they pool there. And pool in the sediments of thousands of feet below the ground. And we now know that we can find these pools of oil and drill down into them and bring up the liquid oil and refine it into the fossil fuels that we currently enjoy in today's world. Right. In California, I'm sure you appreciate the use of fossil fuels with all the cars on your freeways.
That's right. That's right.
And you're making progress towards electric vehicles too.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, thank you for that description. It's probably the best I've heard. So how much of the oil used in the United States comes from drilling in the Gulf of Mexico?
I don't have the exact numbers, but it is a substantial amount. Now, we also have drilling in lots of Pennsylvania, for example, out west, up in Canada, North Carolina, of course, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, some down in the Arizona basin, I think. So we have a lot of onshore drilling as well as offshore. And we've got offshore off the California coast primarily in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm not aware of any wells offshore on the Atlantic seaboard.
Okay, gotcha. Could you give us a little background on the company BP? What is their history and when did they start drilling off the southern coast of the U.S.?
I'm not totally aware of when they started. It is incredibly expensive to drill in deep water. I mean, these drilling rigs are upwards of $500 million, just the cost of the rig, right? And so it takes a company with lots of financial resources to actually go offshore and drill in these deep environments. Not only after you drill, then you got to get the oil onshore to refinery. So it's an incredibly complex operation, and it requires companies with deep pockets, ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, companies of this magnitude to drill offshore.
Why would someone choose to drill offshore if you could drill on the land?
Well, they certainly would drill on the land first. But, you know, the people have been drilling on the land for a long time, and a lot of the large reservoirs, the discoveries, have dried up, or other people have gotten them. So they basically run out of good, big drilling opportunities on land. Now, small independent refiners can find these small pockets and drill, but the big opportunities are in the offshore reservoirs, deep water reservoirs too, not only just offshore. All of the near shore reservoirs have been pretty well depleted, and so now they're having to move into deeper water.
Wow. Sounds like the gold rush.
It is. It's a lot like the gold rush. Right.
So around 2009, BP starts exploring the prospect of drilling in the Macondo prospect. Where is that, and how does this unfold?
Well, a lot of effort goes into trying to find where these prospects are and where that remember I mentioned the oil seeps up to a reservoir that contains oil. So they go out and do what is called seismic surveys. These are very expensive sonar investigations into the earth below the waterline. And so they find possible optimistic products. They lease that plot of land from the Bureau of Land Management. So Bessie has to approve it. They have to buy the lease. Then they got to raise the money to move the platform in. The platform that does the work, that drills the well, is different from the platform that pulls the oil out. So they have drilling platforms. They move these things in, and that was a tragedy of this event. One of the tragedies of the many tragedies was that basically they were finished drilling the well, and they were closing it up and getting ready to move off site so that the production platform could move in and get the oil out of the ground. And of course the well blew out. They were unsuccessful at stopping the well. Remember, the well is in a mile deep water, and the oil is 2 miles below that. So you're from the surface of the water, you've got to go down almost 3 miles. So this was a very, very complex, difficult operation. And a number of things happened. I'm not an expert on well design, but it wasn't any one thing. But all of those small incidences, when they coincide together, resulted in this cement plug not holding, and it blew out, killed 11 people, of course, destroyed the rig, and was the largest oil spill in U.S. maritime history.
So I'm not sure if you can even answer this question, because I know you're not a drill well expert, but what is this blowout preventer that supposedly, or that we know was the apparatus that's, you know,
right. It's a safety system that after they drill the well, they install this gadget. It's a very large, expensive gadget, and it's got some rams that stick out from the side. The pipe goes up the middle of it. And if there is a blowout, you can send a signal down there. And these rams are supposed to close shut and stop the oil, the flow of oil through the blowout preventer. In other words, it's a safety shutoff valve. What happened is, as I appreciated, is that, you know, oil pipe has to be screwed together, right? So you got this long pipe and then the next section gets screwed on. Well, one of those sections where it's screwed is a little more beefy than the rest of the pipe. That was kind of right in the middle of the blowout preventer, and the rams just weren't able to completely shut the well off, as I appreciate one of the things that happened. That was one of those little, remember I said, if that little section hadn't been there, the rams would have probably worked, right? So there's a series of rams, and these are called the blowout preventer. And then from the top of the blowout preventer up to the ocean is a pipe called a riser pipe that brings the oil from the well on the bottom of the ocean all the way up to the surface.
So did any of the employees, the people that were working up in the surface, did they have any sign that something was going wrong underneath the surface?
Apparently they did. Again, this has been thoroughly investigated by the safety officials, and that's not my area of expertise, but there was some, they read the pressures down in there, and I guess there was some conflicting information. Some of the gauges said the pressure's okay, and some of them said no. And while they were trying to figure out which one of the gauges was right, the well blew out. So
how many barrels of oil began spilling into the ocean, and did they try to stop the spill?
Well, once the spill started, you know, you lost the well. I mean, the oil blew up. The power generating engines in the platform on the surface, you got natural gas and oil going up there. And that was an explosive environment. You had an explosion, lots of fire and fuel from the oil. And so the platform was on fire. People abandoned it. They jumped into the water. And luckily there was some work vessels fairly nearby that could come in and help rescue these poor folks. But they had there was no shutting it off after that. In other words, once, you know, the vessel was on fire, there was nobody in the control room. It lost its ability. It has propellers that hold it in place. You know, it's not attached to the bottom. And once you lost power, the rig started drifting, and there's currents out there that move it around. And of course the riser pack broke and the well sunk, and the riser fell over, and initially it was leaking not only at the blowout preventer, but at kinks in the riser piping. Mm. So it was a big bloody mess, I'll tell you that.
And so how does the, how massive was this spill?
Well, roughly the estimates are around 60,000 barrels. Now, a barrel is 42 gallons, right? So remember, the oil industry turns a volume, uses barrels rather than gallons. But if you say a barrel, multiply by 42 to get the gallons, right?
Okay.
So 66,000 barrels times 42, that's a lot of oil. And, you know, once it started leaking, the only really way to stop the well is to drill another well all the way down that 2 miles deep and another 2 miles, intersect part of the well. And they can do this very accurately with modern technology, and pump more concrete down in the piping, right? Now that takes a long time. It took till September actually before they actually completely sealed the well. they made a lot of efforts to stop the well by putting things down the blowout preventer. They tried to use drilling mud, anything that they could find to slow the well. Most of those were pretty not very effective at stopping. Ultimately, they put a second blowout preventer. They had to get one built, and they took it down there and they put it on top of the blowout preventer, as I appreciate it. And that stopped the flow. The flow started on April 22nd and ended July 15th. So that was, frankly, that was remarkable. I thought it would take them 6 months. And so they managed to stop the flow after 3 months, which was a lot quicker than I ever dreamed they could do it. I thought we were in for a mess for oil going into the environment for up to 6 months or so, because that's the amount of time it takes to bring in and drill the intervention wells, is what they call them, the new wells, to intersect the piping way down in the earth's surface, pump oil into it, not oil, but pump concrete into it, special concrete.
Can you help us understand how oil manifests once it's begun spilling into the ocean? How does it affect the environment?
Well, it does it, of course, in a lot of ways. Now, interestingly, oil, remember, it's a natural product. I mean, when we talk about pollution, we really think of a lot of man-made chemicals like the chlorinated pesticides, DDT, for example, or our experience in polychlorinated biphenyls. We hear a lot about chlorocarbons in the atmosphere, in the ozone hole. All of these are chemicals that are not natural. They're man-made. Oil is natural. It is a natural product. And in fact, when oil gets in the ocean, and it does, it seeps up. It seeps up off the coast of California out near Santa Barbara. You can fly over there. That's a natural seep. Humans didn't cause that. And there's lots of natural seeps in the Gulf of Mexico. But that is putting oil into the Gulf at a very slow rate, so the bacteria and the animals can assimilate. Bacteria use oil as food, right? So there's any number of bacteria that can convert oil into more bacteria and carbon dioxide, of course. But as they grow, they metabolize the oil. It becomes more bacteria and the products of metabolism, which is carbon dioxide, back into the atmosphere, right? But a blowout is too much oil in a short period of time, so the environment cannot assimilate that very quickly. In this particular spill, we had a deep water spill. Some of the oil was retained in the deep water down roughly several hundred feet above the sea floor. It came out as we saw in the videos, as this gushes. It looked like a lot of muddy water. Now, it wasn't really muddy water. It was water and oil mixed together, and that jetted out, and it went up a couple of hundred meters, and the jet slowed down. The tiny, tiny droplets moved away. If it's a really tiny droplet, it can't float through the water column very quickly, right? The big droplets are buoyant, and they're going to come bloop. But a mile, it took them 3 to 4 hours for the bigger droplets, the droplets roughly the size of the end of your thumb, for example, to get to the surface. But the tiny droplets, the size of your human hair, the diameter of the human hair, can't rise that quickly. And so they just get pushed away. So we had a deep water spill, and then the rest of the oil went to the surface. It spread out. A lot of it evaporated. Upwards of maybe 40% of the hydrocarbons in the oil evaporated once it got to the surface. It spread out, moved around. The sunlight started changing the oil. And we call that weathering. So the oil gets changed dramatically once it gets to the surface. And, of course, in all of these areas, if there are animals around, those animals get impacted by the oil, either from ingestion of the hydrocarbons dissolved in the water column or getting coated. You see the birds that are coated. And what happens to the poor birds, the feathers are the clothes for the bird. It protects them from the environment, and it loses its thermal isolation capability. And, of course, and then the birds try to clean themselves by preening. And that pruning, they ingest the oil. And, of course, then the livers in the animals cause problems. So there's a number of ways that it can change it. Generally, there's about 1% of the oil are compounds that we think are pretty toxic. 99% are not too toxic. They'll cover, they'll smother, they're annoying, but they're not particularly toxic. But that 1% can cause lots of problems if you are ingesting it, you know, because toxic compounds can cause their effect at very low concentrations, right? So you've got a toxic effect, you've got a covering and smothering effect. Oil is degraded by the bacteria, but the bacteria need oxygen to grow. And so when they degrade oil, they remove the oxygen from certain environments. And that means that other fish and other animals don't have enough oxygen. So the three main ways that oil spills cause is from some sort of toxic interaction or covering and smothering, like the birds, seagrass along the coastline, that the oil has covered those. The grass can't function correctly, so the plant dies. When the plant dies, the plants are what hold the shorelines together in marshes, right? And so then you lose marsh. So, and then, of course, if you're in shallow waters, it causes the oxygen depletion to occur. And of course, animals need oxygen. So suffocation from oxygen depletion, covering and smothering, and toxic effects are the main things. Interestingly, almost all of that occurs during the spill. In other words, we sometimes the damage lasts over a long time, tens of years, but the damage occurs really most of it, 90% of it, during the spill, during the time that it's spilling. So during the summer of 2010 is when most of the environmental damage was done.
So can a disaster like this happen again? I mean, have there been any safety precautions put in place since the spill in 2010?
There's lots of safety precautions, better blowout preventers. They figured out what went wrong. They've got them strong enough now that if they did hit that kink in the tubing, that it would puncture. They've got new types of devices that can fit on top of a broken blowout preventer and shut it off. A $1 billion devices that will basically fit. So there's lots of upgrades, but the sad fact of the matter is that any human-made device can fail. There's lots of effort to keep that from happening. And believe me, an ounce of prevention is worth pounds and pounds of cure. But it can still happen again. Sometimes it's intentional. In 1991, for example, when Iraq invaded Kuwait and the U.S. said, you got to get out, Kuwait didn't back off. They set all the oil wells on fire purposefully. So there was a massive spill over in the Persian Gulf in 1991, roughly as big as the Deepwater Horizon spill. It was on land and some on the water over there. But it was nevertheless, that was an intentional oil spill, which was extremely sad. And what was interesting was that BP was very proud of the work that the Deepwater Horizon had done. And actually, they had people on the rig that day. They were having a celebration of a job well done.
What?
they finished the job on time and on budget. You get a pat on the back, atta boy. And they were, but they didn't quite check every box, right? And again, I don't know all the details, but they have been thoroughly investigated. But it was interesting that they had a delegation that didn't normally live on the rig were out there, and they were getting ready to seal the well and move on to the next one. And an attaboy when all hell broke loose.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't celebrate early, as they say.
Don't celebrate early. That's right. As we've seen with some of these football teams a couple of weeks ago. Don't count your record. That one team that won in the last 13 seconds.
What a lesson. in the case of the, at the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept that you think is to blame for the catastrophic Deepwater Horizon oil spill? Who or what would that be?
I'm an environmental scientist and not an industrial scientist. They looked into that. You know, it wasn't just BP that was operating the well. They owned the well. They operated it. I guess it was leased to another company that hired people there. And they hire a third company to operate the cement jobs. You know, they bring the cement out in boats and put on there. So there was three or four companies involved in this whole process. And I am certain that there has been a thorough review of what went wrong. I don't know what it was, but Professor Breyer, I think, out at Cal Berkeley, led a team that looked into what happened and what could have done. And part of that effort is to make recommendations of what not to do, right? But don't celebrate before you're successful. That's one thing.
You know what? I think you're right. I think that's what ultimately was the biggest mistake that was made.
Right. That's right. So.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Overton, for, you know, helping us understand this environmental disaster.
I enjoyed sharing some insight about this. It was a horrible incident, but you know, we've moved on, and the Gulf of Mexico is a very strong, resilient body of water, and it's certainly beautiful down there right now.
Aw. Well, say hi to the Gulf for us.
I certainly will.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
I know I've said this before, but how bad do you want Professor Overton to have been your chemistry teacher or, you know, any kind of teacher at school.
I could have listened to him talk all day with that like sweet Southern twang. It was so comforting.
Yeah,
truly.
Yeah, he was great. And
he sounds just like he reminds me of my grandpa. Like that's how my papa early used to talk.
Really?
Yeah.
Aww.
Aww.
How sweet.
Yeah, I thought he was awesome. I thought he did, you know.
I've never understood oil before.
I know.
Like, I felt like for the first time, I was like, oh, that's what that is.
Right.
It's old birds. It's old right. birds
yes.
and plants.
It's from plants. Plants make this, the stuff that we're trying to save is made by the stuff that we're trying to, right? Sucking
right.
in all the CO2 and like, then it's kind of.
The other thing that was sort of a light bulb for me was like, he was, it's like, it's a natural, it's organic.
Mm. Yeah.
When you think about an oil spill, you think, oh no, this sort of toxic chemical being poured into the environment. But, oh, right. No, it's just oil from the ground. It's actually organic.
It's just like a really intense, natural, organic material. Like, well, the covering and smothering phrase is like, right. Like,
right. But even what he said was it's not that the material itself is intense. It's that a lot of it at once
right.
can be intense for the environment.
Well, I mean, for me, I had a moment where I was like, wait a minute, when he was talking about the, you know, like the slow release of oil happening off the coast of Santa Barbara or whatever. Right. And mm-hmm. like in other, I was like, oh, so we just have like slow oil spills happening yeah. like in the ocean, but like, of course.
Yeah. It's just amazing when you talk to one of these experts, you sort of, I love this podcast because it's like taking the first class of a bunch of
every subjects.
And then you don't have
and
to
never
take
going on
any
you
tests.
Don't have a test. Yeah, no. It's just learning for enjoyment.
It's like showing up to the your first day of college and then being like, okay, I graduated.
But
yeah, we're gonna end up knowing a whole little about a whole lot
yeah.
versus a whole lot about one little thing.
I mean, bless. That's why we have experts.
Mm-hmm.
How about when he was describing the fact that, okay, so like essentially all of our oil has been depleted from the ground, from like land areas.
Right.
And then we went off to the shore and like, you know, the shallow areas were like, well, we depleted that now.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
now we're just having to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the ocean. Mm. Guys, at some point.
Well, that's right. I mean,
this is going to end.
If this is a finite resource, right? It's not unlimited. So that's more,
right.
even more important. Like if the stuff that we're having to access is so hard to get because it's deep
right.
out in the ocean and the probability of a spill, which he said himself, it can happen again.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, only increases with that risk. It's like, you know, I guess it is, it's not only smart for environmental reasons, but also just like, we're going to run out of this energy source eventually. Right.
Oh yeah.
Like we've got to find other ways to power our power needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got an off ramp. I mean, we're trying at least, but they want to get as much. I mean, you got the fracking, which isn't even, I don't even think those are like reservoirs anymore. It's sort of like getting oil out of like smaller reservoirs,
dirt.
Which are just cracks and dirt.
I'm
and
gonna
stuff.
Have to, we're gonna have to call Dr. Overton.
Yeah, we should.
We should do a fracking episode.
Yeah, we should. Just so I can, you know, it's like one of those words that everyone says they understand. Or it's like thrown around.
Yeah, like just now.
But do
I
just you really
it
understand?
Around. I have
yeah.
no idea what
do
it means.
Do you really know
no.
what that is?
Well, I wish you
I
didn't
don't.
Say that because okay. I would have sounded
I can tell
much
you my
smarter.
Educated guess, but that's all it would be.
Okay, so what are we thinking? I mean, so much more was said. You know, the way he explained how the oil really caused the deaths of the
birds.
You know, species around.
Yeah.
That was another thing I had no idea, you know.
Yeah, you just see the pictures of the, like,
the birds smothered in oil.
Smothered
yeah.
in oil.
And you're just
you're
like, well, of course,
oh,
that he's going to die. Or, you know. But
it's
you
like
don't this,
they're basically
how.
Being like tarred. And I mean, they're already feathered, but they're being tarred. It's like they can't, you know,
right.
it messes with their like thermal, whatever system. And they're trying to pick it off so that they can regulate their temperature. And then they eat it and they die. It's like they're just suffocated by the covering and smothering, which sounds so terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Sounds brutal.
And can we talk about the bombshell that Professor Overton dropped towards the end of the interview?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were celebrating on the rig. They were celebrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. What? Cake, champagne. Good job, boys. Boom.
Ugh. I mean, talk about bad timing. You know, you think that that would only happen in a movie. Right. If you wrote, someone wrote that into a movie, you'd be like, oh, come on,
it'd be
guys.
A comedic moment. Like, that's the joke, yeah. Right? Everyone's just like, yeah. And then in the background, it all just kind of falls apart. Right? This wasn't funny.
This was real life. And oh my God, I just can't imagine. It's just so sad because you know that they were finishing up. It was almost over.
Well, no.
Well, they're closing up the well.
What I understood was that they were just starting to pull oil from the well.
No, they were ready to, they were on their way out. They were going to seal up the well. Mm-hmm. Chris is going to re-listen to the interview now, just real quick. Yeah, it's just, it's a tragic one. And the fact that Professor Overton said that it might be something that of course can happen again, because again, remember, we're humans. Like,
well, you know, I had a thought along those lines when he was saying that the way that they, you know, he was amazed that they did it in 3 months versus six, which, like, you know, from an expert perspective, that's interesting to think, because everybody else was like, why is it taking so long? And he's like, no, that was actually pretty fast. But the fact that they are able to drill the way they fix it was drilling another well to like pump in cement. My thought was, should we, as another safety precaution, already have this pre-drilled second well nearby so that if something goes wrong with the first one, it's ready to go and we just get that cement right down there?
Interesting.
And my guess would be that's way too expensive is what the executives would say.
Yeah,
just in case.
It's They'd like, rather well, take the risk, I'm sure, of there being an oil spill. And
that would be my guess. Or maybe that's just not, who knows, but I would be curious to know, well, how much does it cost to drill a backup thing that you never use versus paying out people and everyone for environmental cleanup?
Right, right. My guess is a lot.
It's a lot of money regardless. Yeah. I think it's over $100.
If it's over $100, they're not going to go for it.
Yeah.
So what do we think here? What did we end up sending to the alarmist jail, Clayton?
We threw BP, the owner of the well, in jail, and we gave the big slap to a lack of maintenance.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think just based on our research and the findings we had, I think the responsibility still falls under BP.
Yeah. I mean, they were operating the rig.
Yeah.
And or they own the rig. I mean, they're the ones who hired the people to operate it and hired the contractors to pour the concrete. And they're the people who, as we already know, paid out millions and millions and millions of dollars in settlements to people to correct and clean up. So it's like,
yeah. I mean, it's like the oil that was 3 miles underneath the surface of the below the surface of the ocean wasn't begging for you to drill it, right?
No.
They weren't.
Do we know that for sure?
We don't. So I guess we can't. We don't know that oil personally, so we cannot.
Oh my God. We should have asked Dr. Overton if he knows that oil personally.
Yeah. Does he know that oil well?
Please. Do me. No. So I feel good about, you know, just keeping that verdict. And of course, if new information pops up, we here at The Alarmist always are happy to change our verdict. Learn more, change what you think. It's the way of The Alarmist.
Yeah, you know, great. And even just hearing about the end of the party, the well job one done, like part of me just feels like hubris, just like as a concept alone.
Oh, yes.
It's like deserves a place, right? Like BP feeling confident enough that, oh yeah, we can drill 3 miles deep to get this oil and we can have a party to celebrate a job well done. It's just like, oh, that hubris really just kind of bit you in the bum.
Yes. And the fact that as humans, we're like, we can, you know, the magnitude of the devices that we've created in order to extract oil out from underneath the surface, right? Mm-hmm. Is that's hubris in and of itself, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just feels like a...
Those aren't recyclable, you know? You kind of... Those are permanent structures that... I wonder if you could repurpose that, make a little water park or something out there.
The rig, the actual...
You can move rigs. You can move them once they're done.
Pop them up, move them around?
Okay, so yeah, turn it into a cruise ship.
No. So maybe oil, I mean...
No, I'm sure they use them for other, you know, this isn't drilling. The only... It's they don't throw it out once, you know...
Right.
That'd be a huge waste.
Okay. Well, you know, again, thank you to Dr. Overton for, you know, being such an excellent teacher and, mm-hmm. you know, giving us a crash course over here on oil. And before we go, Clayton, how are we doing with our reviews?
Oh, geez, there was a sigh in there.
Yep. I'm just... You know, this is the thing that keeps the engine. This is the alarmist.
It's our
oil.
Yeah.
It keeps us running. And if we run out of this oil, then we are not going to be able to continue running the engine.
Maybe we need some cleaner alternatives to our fuel source.
Well, you know, sadly,
I don't know what that would be.
No, sadly, this is the engine we chose to run the show. So we might be unless we're, you know, going to. I don't know. We're going to have to look into some other experts before we do that. But Clayton.
I wonder. So here's the thing. There's nothing just at first glance that's immediately new on the reviews. But I wonder if we task people with writing a specific review on something.
Okay.
That maybe they'll feel more compelled to be like, okay, yeah, I'll come. I'll have an opinion on that.
Okay. You know what I would like to know is what is your favorite topic that we've covered?
Okay, that's great.
So,
yeah, what's resonated with people the most, or what's like, yeah, what has popped up in their brain when they're having a conversation with a group of friends after listening to the episode more than once?
I'm also curious what genre of topic, too. Do you guys like the old history stuff? Do you like the sort of funner stuff that we do, like entertainment stuff that we do? You know, I'm kind of curious what people like, because I know what we like to talk about.
Mm-hmm. All of it.
Brad and Angelina.
Oh,
J-Lo, sure. Ben Affleck breaking up.
Wait, what?
The first time.
First time. Okay.
But I'm just curious what everyone thinks about genre.
Okay. Yeah. Let us know. I'm very curious what your favorite episode has been. And write in, subscribe, rate, review, do it all. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your coworkers, tell your the people on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone.
Just yell the alarmist.
Don't explain. That's just right.
Freak them out.
And stay tuned because next week we're going to be discussing the Tillicum murders.
Earios. Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.